This podcast is for general information only. It is not intended as a substitute for general healthcare services. If you have medical conditions, you need to see your doctor. Use of this information is at the user's own risk. Welcome to FitRx with Dr. Greg Dennis. Join me as we challenge the standard sick model of healthcare. This is your source for everything health, wellness, prevention, fitness, biohacking, and more. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of FitRx. I'm your host, Dr. Greg Dennis. I have another physician today. I'm fortunate to get a lot of doctors on the show. This is Dr. David Billstrom, MD. He is an author, international speaker, and member of the American Academy of Integrative Medicine and American Academy of Medical Acupuncture. He has written several books specifically on autoimmune disease, which is what we're going to talk about today. He has multiple board certifications in functional and regenerative medicine, integrative medicine, physical medicine and rehabilitation, and then medical acupuncture. Definitely excited to see what we can learn from him today. So Dr. Billstrom, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Greg.
Well, all right. Well, first, especially when I'm talking to doctors, I'm always curious to see kind of how they transitioned into more of the kind of the health wellness space, you know, rather than the quote conventional care. So tell us, I guess, a little bit about, you know, how you got started and then how you kind of transitioned to what you do now and specifically with an interest in autoimmune disease.
Yeah, sure. So my original area, especially and subspecially, is I'm a rehabilitation doctor. So my subspecialty was spinal cord injury rehabilitation. So everybody that I saw was either paralyzed from the waist down, neck down, very unique population, very sensitive to medication side effects. But it taught me so much about the gaps in treating most chronic health issues with conventional treatments of simply a medication or surgery. And so initially, I was always looking for something that would help them in a multitude of different ways. But oh my gosh, wouldn't it be lovely if there were no side effects? Because even something that maybe you and I would take for a head cold, a sinus congestion thing, wouldn't think twice about it, it could kill them. And so as I kept looking, acupuncture actually first came up as like helpful for so many things and with no inherent side effects. So the care of the spinal cord injured population is so unique, we would actually become their primary care provider as well. Well, I said, well, geez, if you have to know spinal cord injury to be their kind of family doc, maybe you need to know spinal cord injury to be their acupuncturist. And there was really nobody doing acupuncture where I was at, even though it was a big city. And so I decided to train in acupuncture, medical acupuncture at UCLA. And when I came back, rehab tends to be the place where people get sent to if nobody else could help them. But if we couldn't help them, and there was 12 partners, over 200 bed rehab hospital, we had no place to send them. And so all my partners waiting to give me the most complicated of the complicated. When I got back, I was looking for maybe like a tennis elbow, and I got the most complicated people. And oh my gosh, it worked so much better than I even thought it would. I'm like, well, what else is out there that I didn't know about is through my training? And sure enough, there's a whole lot of stuff. Ultimately, I ended up doing like 100 acupuncture treatments a week for about a decade. And I learned more and more about integrative medicine. The one of the big catalysts to kind of get me away from purely acupuncture was my son at age 3 got this really bad chronic health issue that nobody could help him with. And I was just going, okay, well, I have no choice. I got to find out what's going on here and I got to take care of him. And he did so well that I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to then become this expert in reversing and ideally preventing all chronic complicated diseases and autoimmune disease included. And so small private practice near Chicago, I was seeing people from the area, of course, but also up and down the East Coast. And then I read this truly, absolutely heartbreaking article in the New York Times about this famous journalist who was losing not only her profession, but her life to lupus. And it was the story I'd heard 1,000 times already. years of not feeling good, getting worse and worse. Nobody could figure out what it was. Finally diagnosed with lupus. All she was offered was medicines that would put a bit of a bandage on a couple of symptoms, but not take care of the root cause. And you just keep getting worse and worse, and it has side effects. And I said, okay, this has got to stop. You know, I hear this so often. This cannot be the case. And I said, okay, so somebody's got to change the way that autoimmune disease is dealt with worldwide. And so I thought this would really work as a medical tourism model because people are willing to travel for healthcare they can't get locally. And everybody and the brother and sister, even back then, gosh, you see them more now, had autoimmune disease and chronic disease, and nobody seemed to be able to reverse or prevent. So I hooked up with this tiny little teaching hospital that was right smack dab in the middle of this huge tourism, global tourism area. So I'm about an hour south of Yellowstone, I'm in southeast Idaho, about an hour west of Jackson Hole, Wyoming, about an hour and a half east of Sun Valley, north a couple hours from Salt Lake City with the Snake River running right down the middle. Everybody comes out here to visit and fly fish. And so before COVID, people would have to come see me in person for a first visit and then once a year, and then we could do everything else over the phone. And people started traveling to see us from far away. Then with COVID, and we could do telehealth visits, it made it even easier because people then don't even need to travel to see us, even though it's a lovely place to travel to. So now, because this is a disease of children and adults, we see children and adults from every state in the country and across 21 time zones worldwide. And we're really starting to get some momentum here and truly changing the way that autoimmune disease is dealt with worldwide.
Okay. Well, very nice. And yeah, that's really what I wanted to focus on today is autoimmune disease. And when I saw your bio and kind of specialty in that, and the reason is autoimmune disease is one of those things for me that's just difficult to treat. And I'm always looking to, I mean, my listeners know this, my patients know this, that I'm always looking to treat when I can, more kind of naturally or holistically. I'm not necessarily anti-medicine, but I always feel like that shouldn't necessarily be the first go-to. And certainly I've improved a lot of autoimmune patients with diet and lifestyle, but then others it's really hard, to treat some of these autoimmune diseases. And so when I just learned about you, I really wanted to have you on just to talk about some ways because it just affects so many people. Let's talk a little bit about autoimmune disease. Just, I guess, for the listeners, talk a little bit about general, what autoimmune diseases are. And it seems to me, I mean, I've been practicing now for a little less than 20 years, and autoimmune disease just seems to be much more prevalent than it was even 20 years ago. You could probably say that about every chronic disease, but it just seems to be more and more prevalent. So I guess just let's kind of lay a foundation, talk, if you will, about autoimmune disease and maybe some of the more common ones out there.
I think you're right in general. You know, there's so many more chronic health issues now than there used to be. It's so darn hard to stay healthy. So you hear like all these civilization diseases, all these things that are so much more common than they used to be, whether it's in children, adults, and autoimmune diseases right there, including we now know that the immune system is part of all chronic disease. So kind of the classic autoimmune disease is, you have one half basically of the immune system, which is the adaptive immune system, where we can make antibodies that specifically attack certain things, things that are not us, they're trying to hurt us. So, like if an infection comes into the body, it's not us, it's just going to try to hurt us. So, our adaptive immune system will make antibodies to attack that specific bug, be very specific, kill it, get it out of our system, we're done with it. So, it's kind of like if you get a cold virus, well, you don't need to feel terrible with a cold for the next 20 years. You want your immune system to make antibodies against that specific virus. There could be many, that specific one, kill it, get it out, cold's over in 3 to 4 days. If one of our cells turns to a cancer cell, it's not us. We should be able to make, excuse me, immune cells that go after that specific cancer cell, kill it, get it out of the system, never let it multiply and grow. They talk about how, you know, we get cancer on average 7 times or more in a lifetime, but we should be able to get to 90 and hold our hand up and say we've never had cancer. What somebody's really saying is I probably on average had cancer multiple times, but my immune system did its job, killed it, at the one cell, two cell stage, never got a chance to grow. Good job, immune system. But then the classic autoimmune diseases are where we actually start getting a confused immune system, and it'll actually start creating antibodies to attack our own body parts. We're basically self-destructing once we start attacking our own body parts. And kind of rule of thumb is it's never a good idea to self-destruct, super counterproductive for feeling good. So you might have the classic antibodies against the thyroid called Hashimoto's. You injure the thyroid, you anger it, it stops making thyroid hormone. You need thyroid medicine. Or rheumatoid arthritis start attacking the joints, hurt the joints, damage them, multiple sclerosis attack the brain, that kind of thing. But now we know that the innate immune system, the other half of the immune system, is vitally important when it comes to inflammation control. And so if we get too much inflammation in any one body part, then that starts this whole immune system process that causes damage to the tissue and drives chronic health issues. And this is where we know that the immune system autoimmune disease is part of so many chronic health issues we have, such as heart attacks and strokes and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and osteoporosis, and even 70% of all autism is one particular autoimmune disease. It's just all disease basically has some component of a disrupted immune system.
Yeah, one of my frustrations with rheumatologists is if you send a patient to a rheumatologist to work up a, a rheumatologic disease, an autoimmune disease, there's not going to be any mention of lifestyle, of nutrition, of inflammation. I mean, you're most likely just going to be put on an immunosuppressant, which is kind of the more classical treatment out there, which then you're going to be prone to illnesses and things like that. So it's one of those frustrating things in medicine that on the conventional side, there just isn't a lot of a good treatment options. So talk about, if you will, your approach to autoimmunity. So if a patient comes to you, I'm sure there's a lot of different, steps that you do, but talk about kind of your thought process and what you want to know about that patient, and then what is your kind of standard approach to helping reverse this disease.
Yeah, sure. So I think it's really important, and this is why I always, if I do any videos, if I write a book, a chapter, I always include references, scientific references, because it's really important that people know that this is the science. It's not just one person's opinion, and I think what the kind of medicine that you're practicing is very much the same way. Is this is probably the most scientifically based way of taking care of people, even though I think a lot of people, a lot of practitioners out there, more traditional practitioners, like to think, well, we're doing it based on science. Truly, 70% of everything that's done in more traditional practices is based more on, well, this is the way we've done it historically versus the newest scientific data. So I think one thing that's important to know about the immune system is how this immune system disruption happens, and then why the medicines that typically get used, like you referenced, the ones that suppress the immune system, are really not what the body wants at all. So the body loves balance. You never want to be too high or too low on anything. So like blood pressure, blood sugar, you don't want to be too high. Well, you don't want to be too low either. So the immune system, though, has this beautiful set point right in the middle, not too high, not too low. But when you lose this set point, you actually move away from it both up and down at the same time. So the overactive immune system issues are all the autoimmune diseases. And it's a good example of how all autoimmune disease truly is really one disease that can attack any body part, not hundreds of different kinds. There's such similarity between each one. Everyone's kind of got their uniqueness. Other upregulated immune system issues are things like allergies, asthma, eczema. And then the underactive immune system issues are colds and flus and recurrent infections, like you see this disruption happened already in kids so much with recurrent ear infections, strep throat, sinus infections, pneumonias, bronchitises, but also the infections that drive chronic disease. They're kind of the sneaky infections. They don't give us like a big fever, but they give us inflammation that builds over time, driving chronic disease and then cancer. And so this is where you hear things like, well, cancer is just a flip side of the same coin as autoimmune disease. So when you lose this set point, you move away from it, it could show up at first as the overactive ones. It could show up as the underactive ones, but either way, you know the person's lost their set point. So you always want to bring them back to the middle. Well, when you get an autoimmune disease, that upregulated immune system issue, so often people are offered the medicines that suppress the immune system, as you referenced. So this is where then you take somebody that's too high and too low at the same time, and you give them medicine that pushes down the up stuff, the autoimmune stuff, all the way down to the bottom. And this is where you hear every commercial on TV for this stuff. Oh, by the way, this immunosuppressant medication for your autoimmune disease will increase your risk of cancer, life-threatening infections. And you go, well, that doesn't sound right, because if I know my immune system set point is lost, I know I already have this huge increased risk of cancer already inherently. I already got these infections that are already there driving chronic disease, and I don't want to get more, where these medicines actually will do that. And so what the body says is, why do we don't want immunosuppression? I want immunomodulation. I want to get back to the middle. And as you get people back to the middle, you're getting rid of the up stuff at the exact same time you're getting rid of the infections that are driving the chronic health issue in the first place. But you're also, everything you're doing to reverse an autoimmune disease decreases somebody's risk of getting cancer as well. And fortunately, the science is really clear on what causes the loss of this immune system set point. So we know very well scientifically what we got to do to get people back to the middle and be able to stay off those meds. Or I always kind of say, well, it's not wrong to use those meds. What's wrong is to think that's the only option. And what they really should do is, if you're feeling so much pain, so much brain issue, so much fatigue, whatever it is, you can't even get off the couch. You can't put your pants on. You can't take care of your kids, go to work. Well, you got to do what you got to do to get through your day. But it should just buy us time then to go back and do our due diligence to really figure out what caused the loss of the set point, get it back to the middle. You feel tremendously better, and you don't need those meds long term.
Okay. So how do we get back to the middle?
So I talk a lot about the seven central mechanisms that cause loss of set point. Truly, this is what drives all chronic disease as well. But we now know that the immune system's involved in all chronic disease anyway. So the first one's the gut. The gut is the super central mechanism, and we're a society of totally messed up guts, of course. The second is the stress hormone cortisol, the fight or flight mode, life or death mode, that gets stuck in the stress mode. Cortisol can't convert to cortisone anymore in our body to get rid of inflammation. Cortisol gets stuck in the on position, the stress mode, suppresses the immune system. We start getting these infections that drive chronic disease. So the third one after cortisol is the infections that drive chronic disease. And we now know that all chronic disease has an infection component. There's this great reference I use in my a lot of my slideshows about atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries. And if I can quote it fairly correctly, we used to think that atherosclerosis was an inevitable consequence of aging. Well, there's nothing inevitable about it. It's based on an inflammation, infectious process like all chronic disease. So these infections that drive chronic disease. Now, Epstein-Barr virus is a real common one people might think about, all the tick-borne diseases, but also like herpes virus 6, Coxsackie viruses, mycoplasma, those kind of guys, super big drivers of chronic disease, sneaky. They get in and just create inflammation over time. The fourth is food sensitivities. Because the gut gets disrupted, the intestinal permeability disorder, more commonly known as the leaky gut, drives a lot of health issues, including food sensitivities, and not just the ones that are obvious that people can figure out themselves, because every time they eat something, they feel sick, those immediate ones, but the delayed hypersensitivity reactions, or the IgG reactions, where you eat a certain food protein and days later, up to a month later, it totally whacks you with inflammation. But the inflammation just keeps building over time because you're eating a food that you don't know is creating inflammation every time you eat it because it's so sneaky. And this is where, when it comes to the autoimmune process, this loss of the set point, we know everybody's gut, of course, is disrupted, but everybody's developed a delayed hypersensitivity reaction to the proteins in wheat, 62 different kinds, gluten's one, and cow's milk, dairy proteins. Butter's okay. Actually, it's the only food source of butyrate, which is super important for the gut. Butyrate's super important for healing. And then, because the gut's disrupted, now you start getting vitamin deficiencies. The body doesn't have these basic building blocks and needs to make things and fix things. Then you start getting hormone imbalances, a really big one for women is estrogen dominance. That is a too much estrogen relative to progesterone, huge driver of disruption of the immune system, huge driver of cancer, huge driver of autoimmune disease. And then the seventh one is environmental toxicity. And we live in a very toxic world, so tough on the immune system, so tough on the brain super sensitive. And these toxins build up in the system over time, and then it just disrupts the immune system and everything. So these are the kind of the things that are the truly the super central mechanisms. Now, there's certain things in there that I tend to find get missed, including that infections are part of every one of these chronic health issues. And the food sensitivity is another huge one that people tend to miss, and being really direct with trying to get this calm created in the body, because the body just doesn't heal in the stress mode. You really got to create some calm if the body's going to be in a position to heal.
Okay. Those are all really good things. I want to go back and talk a little bit about each one, and we'll have to do it briefly. I know we could do a whole podcast on each one of those, but so number one is the gut, and you mentioned, a lot of people have gut issues just because of, the foods we eat and all kinds of reasons. So I guess, what do you typically advise, or what are you checking for to just, allow for gut healing and gut health in general?
Well, we do digestive stool analyses and then what are called GI panels locally at the hospital for parasites. So you want to get rid of parasites, typically the broad spectrum antimicrobial that I think is an absolute game changer. We'll get rid of any infection, no matter where it is in the body, whether you know it's there or not. The one we use actually also helps damage tissue heal and gets rid of inflammation through epigenetics that appear. But then the intestinal microbiome is probably the most critical central mechanism in the gut. And then that has an impact when it's a healthy intestinal microbiome. When it's a sick microbiome, it has a negative impact on every body part because every body part has its own microbiome. And the disruption of the intestinal microbiome plus a leaky gut starts disrupting the local microbiome, such as the breast microbiome increasing breast cancer risk, or the microbiome in the pancreatic beta islet cells that need to make insulin. They stop making insulin anymore. So trying to right this intestinal microbiome is a huge one. And what I find, what I think the science is pretty clear on, is a big reason this all gets disrupted is the vitamin D receptors in the gut become resistant to vitamin D. And every cell in the body has vitamin D receptors. We know vitamin D is so important, but the vitamin D receptors become resistant. And researchers out of, well, shout out to my alma mater, the University of Illinois Med School, researchers at U of I Chicago figured this out back in 2018. And they go, oh my gosh, when the vitamin D receptors become resistant, it is a central mechanism, not only gut health, but everything. But if you fix it, it's a central mechanism, everything. So by fixing it, you build up the good guys in the gut, you get rid of the bad guys in the gut, you're optimizing the intestinal microbiome. The lining of the gut stops making pro-inflammatory cytokines that just create more inflammation in the gut, like NF kappa beta. So this is where the gut be can become this engine of inflammation. It gets so beat up, the lining of the gut actually starts making its own pro-inflammatory cytokines to create more inflammation. And then the lining of the gut stops making a very important protein called antimicrobial peptides, AMPs, that are designed to keep bad bugs down in the gut. And so when you fix the vitamin D receptors, good guys go up, bad guys come down, lining of the gut stops making inflammation, lining of the gut makes antimicrobial peptides, keep the bad guys down forever. And then it turns into the super central mechanism of everything. Original data saying, oh my gosh, this seems like we want to do for everything. 6 months later, the same researchers came out and go, oh my goodness, this is a nuclear weapon, quote unquote, against metabolic syndrome. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh my goodness, that's insulin resistance. So are you telling me by fixing the vitamin D receptor resistance, by fixing vitamin D receptor resistance in the gut, you're fixing insulin resistance in every cell in the body? And then researchers in Harvard come out and go, oh my goodness, this fixes brain chemistry. So you can fix major depressive disorder. Another psychiatric journal, geez, people become more outgoing, more social, it changes your personality. So this vitamin D receptor resistance, correcting it is a huge central mechanism. And what the researchers said is it takes three things. And two of them most people know about: daily vitamin D, daily probiotics, you hear a lot about that, but also daily butyrate. So butyrate is tested for on these digestive stool analyses that a lot of integrative functional medicine docs use. It's one of the short chain fatty acids made by the good bacteria. Well, the good bacteria get decimated for all these different reasons that you kind of related, you mentioned, including antibiotics and stress and acid blocking meds and Motrins and Advils, all these kind of things. And so, but using the triad, it fixes the vitamin D receptors. You get this healing in the gut, including the good bacteria eventually make butyrate and short chain fatty acids better on their own. And then you get this huge change on the outside of the body. And that's one of the things that I think get missed is recognizing what these vitamin D receptors are able to do, including their role in that, like turning off all the genes that would code, try to push somebody to type 1 diabetes. Also, the genes that would tend to try to push people to autism can get turned off through optimizing vitamin D and vitamin D receptors themselves. Huge central mechanism.
Yes, a lot of great information there. And obviously the gut is a huge topic. But next you mentioned cortisol, and obviously that's related to stress, and then that can go back to sleep. And talk a little bit about that and just maybe some ways that we can improve cortisol that would in turn help with the autoimmunity.
Yeah, so I tend to tell folks that stress is stress for the body. Physical stress, emotional stress, spiritual stress, the body is just all stress. Now, so, but that fight or flight mode, stress mode, is designed for intermittent stress, kind of more emotional stress, up, down, fight or flight mode, then you live to tell the tale, it comes down. But when you get these physical stressors, like these infections or vitamin deficiencies, a disrupted gut, such things like this, well, that's a 24-hour a day, 7 day a week, week after week, month after month stress. It kicks cortisol up and locks it in place. And then all these bad things happen, suppresses the immune system, hurts the gut, throws off all the other hormones, bum, 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 bum. So we talk about, well, let's get rid of the things that are causing physical stress. Get rid of the infections. We'll get rid of the vitamin deficiencies. We'll start healing the gut. We'll get rid of the foods that are bugging you. Now we put cortisol in a position to come down from the stress mode into the calm mode. Nobody heals well in the stress mode. Get in the calm mode, the body can fix anything so much better. So, two couple things. One is typically, yes, you got to get rid of the physical stressors, but once you're about a mid-teenager or older, you really need to use something specific to bring cortisol down. And people hear a lot about the adrenal adaptogens, things that rebalance the immune system, things that reset cortisol. So, things like ashwagandha is a common one, cordyceps, rhodiola, maybe ones people have heard a lot about to help cortisol come down. Okay. But what we find is before age 17, probably 16, 17, you heal so good as a kid, you don't need an adrenal adaptogen. Just get rid of the physical stressors that tend to come down. But when the body's been stuck for a while, the body's forgotten what calm feels like. We can say, okay, cortisol, we got rid of these physical stressors. Now find this calm, now fix everything. Cortisol's like, what is this calm that you speak of? I have no clue what you're talking about. They're like, oh my gosh, that's right. You've been stuck here so long, you forgot what calm feels like. So this is where it's so important, where so many practitioners talk about, well, let's teach your body what calm feels like. Let's do some meditation, some deep breathing, repetitive prayer, progressive muscle relaxation. Let's get out in nature. Getting out in nature is so good. We actually use nature to heal. Including, we put together this compendium over 60 different scientific articles about how nature helps human health and well-being. Pretty much the central mechanism is cortisol reset. So now you're doing teaching the body what calm feels like. Now the body can find calm again. Now truly the body's in a position to fix anything once you can create that calm response.
Okay. Well, very nice.
The
And next you
lifestyle
mentioned,
stuff you're up. Yeah.
yeah, next you mentioned infection, and you talked about that a little bit already, but you mentioned, things like Epstein-Barr, some of these maybe chronic infections, herpes, other things. What is there one that you see, more common than the others that's maybe easily missed?
I think all the ones I mentioned are the common ones. Now, there's other ones that are a little less common, but those are kind of the main ones. I think it's really important to just know that we got to get rid of infections, even if we're not quite sure what kind we're dealing with. And so I think one of the things is you hear a lot of the studies that go, well, we tend to see these bad bugs when we look at this patient population, but those are just common bugs to be in humans, so they can't be causing this issue. So like childhood leukemia, all the data is like, well, the kids that get leukemia have almost universally high titers of herpes virus 6 and Epstein-Barr virus. Well, they're not causing the childhood leukemia because those are just different ones in different people. So they can cause childhood leukemia at the same time they cause juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, adult rheumatoid arthritis, Hashimoto's, all this kind of stuff. And so this is where we really need a broad spectrum antimicrobial that's so good at killing bad bugs, no matter where they're at, what they do. So, and there's so much good data on nanosilvers. So we use a particular product out of Canada called pH structured silver solution, which is a nanosilver that can get rid of any infection, no matter where it's at, including I just did a video about how it kills malaria. And I mean, like, yeah, get rid of all this stuff. It's a nanosilver. It's so much different than colloidal silver. You cannot use colloidal silver. It's not powerful enough to get rid of these dudes that drive chronic infections. And you can't use it long enough to get rid of them because they're so stubborn. Because you've used colloidal silver long enough to turn blue, but that's not the case with nanosilvers. But this one I love more than any others because of the structured water. That's why it's called pH structured silver solution, is the water is structured, which they call the fourth phase of water. So I think most people that have ever taken a science exam, like junior high, high school, of three phases of water: solid, liquid, gas. This one's the fourth phase, called structure, where it's the biophysics of water molecules, just super geeky cool, where the water molecules kick out protons, a proton, and they start stacking like pallets and have this amazing impact on the body, including getting rid of inflammation and helping damaged tissue heal. And some more recent data was on burn injury patients where they were using this a lot to keep away the infections that can come and you got to debride it and it's a mess. Oh my gosh, the tissue's healing so much faster. What's going on with this pH structured silver solution, structured water? Well, then they did the study on skin cell healing, and it turns out there's 88 genes in a skin cell that code for healing. And this structured water upregulates the activity of 59 out of the 88 genes in a skin cell that code for skin cell healing. Like, oh my gosh, this is why they're helping these skin tissues, skin cells heal so much quicker. Now, I think as most integrative practitioners know, the skin and the gut are basically the same tissue. So we think this is probably what's going on in the gut, also probably other tissues, because anything that works through epigenetics has this profound impact on tissue healing, including Harvard study 16 years ago said, well, this is what meditation and this kind of stuff does. It works through epigenetics. It flips off the bad genes, turns on the good genes, every cell in the body. Well, this is why meditation is good for everything. And actually, butyrate almost exclusively works through epigenetics, the one I mentioned earlier. Thus, it has this huge impact on the body as a whole, not just on gut and vitamin D receptors, for example.
Interesting. So when you're working somebody up, are you checking for a lot of these chronic diseases you referenced, or are you just going ahead and treating everybody with this nanosilver you talked about?
Well, pretty much, we know that infections are part of all this, so we use the nanosilver a ton. There's another product that we use a little bit, which is plant-based, called Biocedin. That's another one that's a broad-spectrum antimicrobial that a lot of people use. We kind of like the pH structured silver solution because the regimen is so simple. It's just I'll take it twice a day, versus the Biocedin tends to have a lot of tendency to drive Herxheimer's reaction, the die-off reactions. Start low, work your way up. You got to dilute it three couple times a day between meals. One of the interesting things, I don't tend to see any Herxheimer's reactions with the silver, even though it's just as powerful of a antimicrobial as the Biocedin, if not more so. But what I think is going on with that is with the structured water getting rid of inflammation and helping damaged tissue heal, I think the die-off that comes from Biocedin die off from the pH structured silver solution doesn't create the inflammation and tissue damage with the silver, because right at the same time that you're releasing these toxins because of die off, you're getting rid of the infection or the inflammation they might cause and the tissue damage they might cause. So we almost universally don't see Herxheimer's reactions with the nanosilvers.
And how long do you recommend they take this nanosilver to
So
treat the
typically,
infection?
Yeah, so typically, so if we can, we like to test everybody for what infection, because even though we know we're going to need a broad spectrum antimicrobial, it's always nice to know what you're dealing with. So we typically, if we can, and there's no reason it can't be covered by insurance with the right diagnostic codes, we check blood for them, and ideally we like to check the poop test if somebody can, to look for the infection we're dealing with. So typically these infections that drive chronic disease, we're thinking at least 3 months, 6 months,
Oh,
nine
wow.
months, 12 months. Everybody's different. Yeah, this is why you can't use the colloidal silver. But what we kind of base it on is you have these multi-organ system issues. Sure, you got this autoimmune disease, but you also are tired. You got brain fog. You got, your sex drive is down, and all this kind of stuff going on all at the same time. But everything is always connected. So we say, okay. So once you can say, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. I'm probably 70, 80% better overall. Profoundly better. Still room for improvement, of course. We're thinking, hey, there's a really good chance that you clear these infections by now. So what we're going to do is we're going to stop the antimicrobial, see how you feel. If you stop it and go, hey, I'm still really good without this stuff, no backsliding, you fix the infection. It's gone. And hopefully we got that immune system back towards a set point enough that those infections that drive chronic disease will never rear their ugly head again, whether it's Epstein-Barr virus, any kind of stuff. These bad infections from the outside, like Mycoplasma, herpes virus 6, will never get back in, and we keep you good forever. On the other hand, if you're that much better and you stop it and you start going, hey, I'm starting to backslide here, usually happens within a couple of days, maybe a week or so. Hey, I'm starting to backslide since I stopped that stuff. Oops, not gone totally. We had the numbers down low enough that you felt profoundly better, but they're not gone totally. They're trying to bring their numbers back up again. We have them hop right back on it. Usually, if you get back on it quick enough, within a couple of days, you're back to feeling that 80% better. Stay on it for 2 months, try to stop it again, with the ultimate goal being you stop it, you stay fine without it, we got you back to the middle enough that they'll never rear their ugly head again, trying to cause that same thing to come back, or try to cause something different as time goes on, like hardening of the arteries, or neurodegenerative disease like the Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, Lou Gehrig's disease. This is a great way of getting that immune system back to the center, to really do our due diligence to prevent new issues as time goes on, once you really get them set in a good place and get rid of the stuff they've already had.
Very interesting. That's one I had not heard of before. So is this something that people can order themselves, or do they have to get it through a physician?
It's out of Canada, and you can get it yourself. The one people can get themselves is only 10 parts per million, where a lot more therapeutic is 30 parts per million.
Okay.
And you have to be a medical practitioner to get the 30 parts per million, but anybody can get it online. It is a super game changer. One reason is getting rid of the infections, but boy, this impact on epigenetics, oh my gosh, is that just up the bar.
Very interesting. Okay. So after infection, you mentioned food sensitivities, and this is obviously a big one, especially with the standard American diet and people just eating like crap. I've, turned some autoimmune diseases around or improved with doing nothing else but cleaning up their diet. There's, a lot of different kind of ways to go about, diet and theories out there. How do you approach that? What's kind of your nutritional advice in figuring out these food sensitivities, and then going forward, as you're treating these autoimmune patients, what do you typically advise, nutrition-wise?
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. The human body is so good at healing that oftentimes, we tend to think that it's super complicated to fix stuff. But truly, if you speak the language the body speaks, you can make profound changes with even little changes. Now, changing how they're eating, oh my gosh, that is huge. Having them create calm, do relax, huge kind of the lifestyle stuff. And a lot of people are going to get better simply by that stuff. The body is just so darn smart that you do that. Oh my gosh, huge central mechanisms. But then if they're not getting better with that stuff, this is when you go, okay, well, there's got to be some infections we're dealing with. There's got to be some of this other stuff going on. So typically, the intestinal permeability issue drives food sensitivities. People can figure out the immediate hypersensitivity reactions with foods better in any test, better in skin testing, blood testing done locally. Every time I eat this, I just don't feel good. hey, kids with peanut allergies is a kind of extreme example, but a really good example. But then also something more subtle like, geez, every time I eat ice cream, I get gassy. Well, that's something in there that's bugging you. The delayed hypersensitivity reactions, and if you want to kind of get a really interesting conversation going with a lot of traditional docs, you talk about this IgG, delayed hypersensitivity, food sensitivity thing. Is you eat a food protein, it's only the proteins that do this, and days later or up to a month later, the proteins are still circling in your system. Long after you've eaten the protein, it whacks you with inflammation. But if you don't know it's whacking you, sneaky delay, you keep eating it, and this inflammation just grows, grows, grows over time until somebody says, oh my goodness, where's all this inflammation coming from? I'm not feeling nearly as good as I should. It's got to be coming from someplace. But I know one thing, it's not what I'm eating because nothing makes me feel sick. Well, it doesn't make you feel sick in the obvious way, it's making you feel sick in the sneaky way. So I'll give you an example of sort of the data behind this. So IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, huge international problem. When they like 15% of people worldwide have IBS, where you almost ready to poop your pants half the time, and personally hard to treat. Well, the studies that came out like 10 years ago, even now, if you do a finger prick test, food sensitivity test for these delayed hypersensitivity reactions to foods, and the tests they use are the same ones that are available today, 96 different foods were tested. You eat clean based on the food sensitivity test. IBS is 40% better after 4 weeks, 80% better after 8 weeks. It turns out this notoriously hard to treat thing is not necessarily as hard to treat as we may have thought because of what we now know about these delayed hypersensitivity food reactions. So you can become sensitive to any food. And what happens is with the leaky gut is undigested food proteins, because you're supposed to digest proteins in your gut, absorb the amino acids, get them into the system, all this good stuff, nutrients too. Well, if you got a leaky gut, undigested food proteins get from the gut lining basically through the leaky gut to where the immune system is. And then the immune system recognizes these proteins as supposed to be here. Gosh, maybe it's an infection. I don't know, says the immune system. I better make antibodies to attack it, and it become because it's my enemy. Well, then you start making antibodies against these food proteins. And it just so happens that these food proteins, so many of them, are very similar to our own proteins. And we might start getting confused and starting attacking our own body parts because those proteins look awful, kind of awful similar to these food proteins. This molecular mimicry kind of stuff. And you develop these food sensitivities. So when it comes to autoimmune disease, if there's any autoimmune disease, we know for sure that person has developed a delayed hypersensitivity reaction to wheat proteins, 62 different kinds, gluten's one, and cow's milk dairy proteins. Butter is okay, typically, but it's 99.99% fat, and it's actually a great fat, including it's the only food source of this butyrate that we talked about before. British Medical Journal back in 1961 said, hey, celiac people, autoimmune celiac people, you got to get rid of wheat proteins, but you also got to get rid of cow's milk dairy proteins because they're so darn similar, but you can fix the cow's milk kind of a thing. And so this was kind of this, we've known sort of this, but it got lost in the decades. So what we tend to do is say, okay, autoimmune person that just came in, if you haven't gone wheat and gluten-free, butter's okay. Yeah, let's do that between now and your next visit in 6 weeks. Let's see how you feel. And kind of to your point about how smart the body is, if somebody comes back in 6 weeks and goes, oh my gosh, I cannot believe how much better I'm feeling. You gotta be kidding me. 6 weeks just doing this? Wow. Those are only foods, proteins bugging them. But if they come back and go, eh, I'm a little better, kind of better. Like maybe my gut's a little better, but I'm not a lot better. We're going, okay, well, we knew those food proteins were bugging you. You gotta have other ones bugging you too. So this is where we then ask them to do ideally a food sensitivity test where we can pinpoint exactly which foods are bugging and which ones aren't and get rid of them until they get 80% better again. And then we go, oh, you're 80% better. Well, we'll get rid of the broad spectrum antimicrobial and see how you do. Okay, you're 80% better. There's a good chance we fixed the gut enough that you've fixed these food sensitivities. We'll start bringing them back one at a time in a special way called the formal food challenge, one per week, and your body can tell us what's ready for this food. Or if they, financially or whatever, can't do a food sensitivity test, we'll say, well, let's do an elimination diet. Okay, so here's these foods that tend to bug you when you have this stuff going on. Here's the ones that don't. Let's have you just eat the ones that don't for a while. But once you feel profoundly better, we'll start bringing the other ones back. One per week, Farm Food Challenge. You're in a position to basically reset just about every food. Now, we ask people long term with this autoimmune stuff to try to stay away from wheat generally as best you can. Yeah. A hot date with your spouse, hopefully with your spouse or girlfriend. A hot date, well, you can cheat, but don't do it too often because wheat proteins inherently create inflammation in everybody's gut a little bit. And if you're trying to keep a healthy gut, because 80% of the immune system surrounds the gut, a healthy immune system, once you feel great, you want to stay great forever, you don't necessarily want to be eating something regularly that creates some inflammation every time you eat it. That's going to try to like bring, drag you back down again. But truly, you can reset every other food protein over time.
So, if I'm hearing you right, you said you may not necessarily test everybody for these food sensitivities. Maybe take away the big ones, gluten, dairy, other elimination type diets, see how they do. Maybe if they're not improving enough, then do all the testing. Did I understand that correctly? Or
I get rid of the wheat proteins and the cosmic dairy first. And if they're not a profoundly, it's not quite a bit better by 6 weeks, then we either want to go straight to the elimination diet or the food sensitivity test.
Yeah, I recommend a lot things like the Whole30 diet, and it's basically just whole foods. I mean, you're just getting rid of the crap, basically. But it's, you know, it's excluding gluten, dairy, you know, nuts, and just a lot of things they could be sensitive to. And if people will do that, and it's strict when somebody's not used to eating that way, but if somebody will do that, man, in just a 30-day time period, which is what that is, I find so many people just feel so much better, just in general, their gut, and so that's always a good, I feel a good starting place. So.
I think that's such an important teaching tool too, because you got these people that have had these chronic health issues for so long. They've probably seen a lot of other practitioners. Nobody's quite been able to help them. They eventually get to somebody like yourself or myself. And I mean, they can be quite discouraged, right? They have no optimism that we can turn this around. They have hope, possibly, but not necessarily optimism. But then here they are 30 days later going, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. And we're like, I know, isn't that cool how good your body is at healing? This entire time you've had this stuff, your body has known how to fix this. Your body's been trying to fix this, but things have gotten in the way. And all we did is figure out what was getting in the way. We got out of the way, and your body said, all right, I have my opportunity. I can fix this. I've been waiting 40 years to fix this. I can fix it. And then a month later, they're feeling better. It's crazy good.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for listening to Fit RX. I invite you to share this with friends and family. If you would like, you can check out our website at vibrantlifedc.com, or you can email me at drgreg@vibrantlifedc.com.